Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to speak with Tom Bernatavitz, Senior Vice President, Federal Plans with Aetna. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Bob.
And I bet we're going to talk about health care.
We are.
Something about open season, huh?
Yes, sir.
And Tom, he reminded me in the green room that this was the seventh, or I think it's the seventh, because we've been on the air now 7 years, which also reminded me we haven't had our seven-year cupcake, so I guess next week is cupcake week, and that's real healthy. And John Elliott, guest co-host, used to be federal benefit seminar presenter, but has retired. Also retired from the feds, but still answers emails and comes in and does the show. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob, and Tom as well.
It's been a few weeks, and Andrew's going to run the boards, if you will. So give Andrew a call as we get into this. Andrew's, and so are we, at 202-465-3080. All righty, Tom. So what's new with the plan this year? We'll start off with that.
It's actually plural. We have several plans that we offer federal employees that pretty much run the gamut based on needs, personal preference, choice, cost, risk. We have two HMO plans, health maintenance organization plans, that are offered in the Washington, D.C. area. We also have them offered in major markets throughout the country. We have a consumer-driven health plan, which is also offered throughout the country. We have a high-deductible health plan with a health savings account, which is our lowest-priced plan. And new this year, we've introduced something called the value plan option, which is a very simple, easy-to-use plan, which is designed around achieving wellness credits if you if you take measures to actually access preventative care. So it's almost like a concept similar to a vanishing deductible that you see in auto insurance, in the auto insurance industry. We've rolled out a plan that's very simple, easy to use, with a deductible, and you can get credits towards that deductible if you comply with these wellness measures that are embedded in the plan.
Okay. Can I go back to the first thing you mentioned in HMO, just so that the listeners can be fully conversant on this? What's an HMO?
An HMO is a health maintenance organization. They've evolved over the last 25 to 30 years since they were first introduced in the marketplace. They used to be very community-driven plans where there was one rate offered to the community around a health system, where you have to receive all of your care within that one health system, and you couldn't go out of the network. Over the last 25 to 30 years, they've taken on different shapes and forms, but the concept is essentially the same, where you stay within the panel of network providers. Our health maintenance organizations are called Open Access, which demonstrates the evolution of the plans, in that you don't have to go to a gatekeeper or a primary care physician to access care. You can go directly to specialists as long as they reside within our network of preferred providers.
Now, would these providers be within Aetna, or would they be maybe I have a doctor. Could my doctor be in this HMO?
It's actually likely that your doctor will be in our HMO. We have a significant number of doctors who participate, and most doctors participate in several different health plans as well.
Okay, all right. And then you mentioned another thing, a consumer-driven plan.
Yeah, that has always confused me. I understand the HDI definition, health savings account. I understand that completely. Although you'll need to explain it for our audience, but consumer driven, you need to explain not only to our audience, but I always read it and it's some brief explanation somewhere, and I really don't get it.
Okay, so there's two in the audience sitting right here in the studio.
Right, so
would love to hear a
eager
definition
to hear of
that. Of
what a consumer-driven plan is all about.
The concept behind a consumer-driven health plan is to empower the consumer to take control over their own healthcare decision-making. And what we attempt to do in designing these is to provide the consumer with a bundle of money right up front at the beginning of the year that if they – so that if they utilize access to the healthcare system as efficiently as possible, they will retain as much of that money as they possibly can. It's like an upfront benefit amount. With our plans, it's $1,000 for a single, $2,000 for a family. And there's also a dental fund, which is $300 for a single and $600 for a family. And the idea there is that if you're not anticipating a significant amount of healthcare needs throughout the year and you're sort of rolling the dice, you want to get your preventative care, which is paid for at 100% outside of the fund, you do have these fund dollars available so that if you have a minor illness, you can go online and A, check to see if check to see if your doctor's in the network. And if they are, chances are the amount they charge will be significantly less than if you go out of network. You can actually price a procedure. So you can use tools on our website to determine how much a specific procedure will cost within our network or outside of our network. And the expenses for those things are charged against that upfront fund. If there are dollars left over in the fund at the end of the year, you had a real good year, those dollars accumulate and roll over to the next year where you get an additional $1,000 or $2,000 if you're a family. So it's the concept here is to is to provide the consumer with not only the fund but tools and technology to enable them to make better decisions over their own healthcare needs and choices.
What happens if you, say, leave the plan for and you have money left over? What happens to the money?
In a consumer-driven plan, that money is forfeited.
Right.
Okay, because that money is a benefit. It will roll over from year to year so long as you stay in the plan, but it's a notional benefit, which is very different than a health savings account.
Right. Yeah, that I understand. Okay. I mean, that but we'll need to, as I said, discuss those too, because a lot of the audience is confused about those as well. But so I think I'm beginning to, the light bulb's beginning to go on for me about consumer-driven plans. So the incentive to use less and have your amounts build and build and build is, if I understand it correctly, if you do then get sick, you have a bigger pile of cash to use. Is that?
That's absolutely correct. So if you've been in our plan 5 years and you've not accessed that fund, you're going into year six with $6,000 right up front. That'll take care of everything first before you hit the deductible phase, which is like a donut hole if your listeners are familiar with Medicare Part D.
No, we did that, but I'm not so sure all of us remember.
and that deductible amount is $1,000. Single, $2,000 family, and then the normal benefits apply, which are similar to just straight PPO type benefits, which are 85% coinsurance reimbursement for in-network care.
All right, how does one access your website?
Simply going online to www.aetnafeds.com, and I should let you know that we spent a lot of money to newly redesign our website this year to really try to make it as simple and as easy to use as possible. We in the insurance industry have been accused of not making things as simple as we possibly could, and I think we're trying to make as much effort as possible to that end for 2013.
Now, all right, you describe open access. Do you still have the plan? You did it one time where it's not a consumer-driven, it's not a obviously high deductible, just a regular straight HMO. You still have that, I take it?
Yes, we do. And that's that plan still has the most number of federal enrollees
right.
out of all of our plans offered nationwide. And that plan is for someone who's not looking to take direct consumer control over those choices and everything. It's kind of like the antithesis of that. That plan is designed for someone who just wants to go to the doctor, pay a copay, and be told what to do. You know, and that's a lot of folks want that. They don't want to become significantly engaged in their health plan and their decision making. They want to go to a primary care physician, plop down their $15 copay for our high option or $20 copay for our basic option, and then everything from that point on, for the most part, is just paying out a flat copay for your share of the costs, and the health plan takes care of everything behind the scenes.
All righty. Is there an 800 number for those that maybe are computer challenged?
Yeah, the 800 number for our open access plan is 1-800-537-9384. And for all other plans, it's 1-888-238-6240.
Okay. Great. Now, we've got a definition of the different plans offered. If you don't mind, could we walk through one's age and career? And let's start off with a young single person. What would attract them to Aetna?
Okay, young single person who's relatively healthy would probably purchase a health plan based on price. You know, they want to retain as much of that take-home pay as they possibly can. Our lowest price plan is our high deductible health plan with a health savings account. That employee contribution is among the lowest in FEHBP for all the plans that participate in the program. And there are some unique features associated with that that a young person probably won't look into, but they really should, in that it's kind of a way similar to like a 401k or a thrift savings plan for federal employees, where you can really start socking away some money before you know it to gauge against future health care needs. And that is the health savings account component of this plan. So it's our lowest cost plan. We deposit funds into a health savings account that we set up for that young single enrollee, and we deposit $62.50 a month into that fund. So over the course of the year, that'll be $750 that if they did nothing, they'll have they've started to build a savings account for the future.
And they can invest that portion or not?
You can invest dollars in a health savings account in investment options once you've accumulated over $2,000 the HSA.
So even if they don't contribute and they just rely on the $700 and some odd, in about 3 years they could start investing in stocks, bonds, whatever, pretty much the gamut.
That's correct. Up until then, we invested in a simple savings account, which it's not earning much, as you well know. It's, I think it's less than a quarter of a percent these days.
But the point being is somebody very young could use the additional cash flow that would be provided by the health savings account, and they don't really have to take anything more out of their salary to fund it because it's being funded by the insurance company. And if I'm not mistaken, there are really no fees because the fees are handled internally, so it's not coming out of the individual's account.
Yep, and they're saving really nice. And they're saving on the premium side too. That's not to be forgotten. I mean, they're obtaining a really good quality health plan from a major insurance company at among the lowest price that you possibly can within the federal government, and at the same time accumulating a nice savings account for the future. We started talking about this a little bit too, but not to be forgotten is the element of the potential tax savings associated with these accounts. The IRS allows individuals to contribute up to $3,250 into a health savings account annually. For a family, it's $6,450. And that is top-of-the-line tax write-off. So you reduce your income by that amount. Within the federal government, payroll offices will take additional amounts out of your paycheck for you if you choose and deposit it into our health savings account, or you can simply make a lump sum deposit at any time throughout the year for any amount that you want and take a deduction off of your income taxes. So let's say you hit the lottery late in the year, you're a young person who's playing lottery tickets and you wanted to reduce your tax liability, you could send an EFT form or write a check to us for up to $3,250 minus the amount that we deposited, which is $750, and you know that reduces your tax liability by that amount.
Could you do that in installments? Say not payroll deduction. I understand you can do that too, but let's say you'd like to write a check for $1,500 and then the rest of it another time during the year?
Definitely. And what I tell people to do who are sort of they're not anticipating any health care needs and they joined our health savings account, what I tell them to do is if you really don't have the funds but something unexpected occurred and you have $5,000 worth of medical expenses and your share for out-of-pocket expenses was like $1,000, the smart thing to do is write a check to your HSA for $1,000. Take the money right out of your HSA to pay for your out-of-pocket expense, and you've reduced your tax liability by $1,000. I mean, it's a beautiful thing if folks would really take the time to look into
it. So as long as you use it for medical expenses, not only do you get the first tax break you described, but it's tax-free coming out.
That's correct.
So it's a really, it's a good deal, and people might wonder, well, what happens if I never get sick and I build up this huge account because I've been contributing up to the max year after year after year, and, you know, I just never have medical issues or don't think I will have one. Of course, the older you get, the less likely is you'll be able to avoid that. But say, theoretically, you want to take that money out and use it to buy something other than medical stuff.
It's great. It's a savings account, but let's just...
You can, but then it becomes taxable.
Yeah, but...
Is what
it's
I'm
taxable,
getting.
And there's a penalty, too, if you...
I didn't
take
know
it out before a certain age.
Yeah, similar to like a 401k or an IRA if you use it before...
But if you're 59 and a half and you say, I want to buy a boat, you can use... That's your money, and it's, we hope, grown through the miracle of compounding interest. But because it's not a boat, isn't a medical expense, it's a taxable event, right, Bob?
Unless you get the right accountant.
Oh, then you can.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. The boats are a real stretch.
Yeah. But the nice thing too is that the money is rolling over. The question you asked about the consumer-driven plan was that what happens if I switch plans or leave the federal government? The benefit that you've accumulated goes away.
Right.
Here, this is not going away.
If you've
exhausted any potential for using those funds for a medical expense and you want to buy that boat, you certainly can buy that boat.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand the heart of it. We still have medical coverage under health insurance, and we have choices. And one of the choices would be to buy one of these things called a high deductible health care plan where the deductible is high, but the individual then, in theory, puts money into a health savings account. But again, the heart of it is they still have coverage. How they pay for the coverage is up to them. They want to pay through the savings account with money that they've put in tax-free. Still got the coverage. But at the end of whenever, if they decide to take the money out, because they didn't need it for health coverage throughout their career. I'm not saying all of it, but let's say half of it. Let's say 10th of it. Then they would be able to take it out. They would have to pay taxes on it because they got a deduction going in. But like John says, with a miracle of compounding of interest or compounding of anything, there might be a whole lot more there. Or in the awful cases, they need to spend it, but at least they've got the money to do it. But they still have the coverage.
And the coverage is important, and I know folks like Walt Francis, who was here last week, informs people, rightfully so, to focus on the catastrophic maximums in all of your health plans. That is the maximum amount that you will pay before your health plan says, no mas, you're not going to pay anymore, we're going to pay everything else. And even with this high deductible health plan, the maximum out-of-pocket that you will pay for in-network benefits is for a single is just $4,000. And that includes your deductible. So when you look at the gamble that you're taking versus the potential upside that you could achieve with these things, it's, to me, a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's almost not a gamble.
Yeah, it's such a good deal, but they've been wildly unpopular, these high deductible health savings account plans.
I think because they're wildly don't understand it.
Yeah, exactly. If they understood it, a lot more people would take advantage of them.
And we are the FEHBP leader in high deductible health plans with health savings accounts. We're approaching 40,000 members nationwide in our high deductible plans.
That's pretty good.
Now, that's a big number on the surface, but in terms of the potential number of enrollees, when you have 8 million folks who are eligible for these things and 40,000 are taking them, you know, there's a huge understanding gap that we're trying to fill as best we can.
Okay. So we started off with this single person and profiled them very well, Tom. Now, the person's a little bit older, but still single, a little bit older. Let's say they're mid-career at this point. What should they potentially be looking for? I know you'd say everybody's different, but do we got to have a global issue there that one of your plans might fit them better than others?
You said single person?
Single person,
single
mid-career.
Single person, mid-career. Still encourage you to look at the HDHP with the HSA. But as I was thinking about, we have the most options available to federal enrollees out of any health plan that's offered. And as I was coming in here and I was thinking, how do I sort of break those down into different components so that individuals can assess the risk that they want to take versus the complexity and additional elements that are associated with each of these plans. I was thinking, well, I'll go platinum, no risk. I'm willing to pay more in premium, but I just want to, you know, if I need a heart bypass, it's going to be paid for and I'm going to have very little exposure to sort of moderate. You know, I'm willing to pay a little bit in premium. I'm not going to pay a Cadillac price, but I want my sort of moderate healthcare needs taken care of immediately. Should I have the need to access them? To sort of like, you know, I'm willing to take a risk. I'm the young invincible. I'm not going to take any chances. And we talked about the HDHP. I think your question is more geared to the middle moderate option there. And there are really two plans available to most folks here. And one is the open access HMO. Which is that the basic open access HMO, which has out-of-pocket premiums, which are slightly higher than the high deductible plan. For a single, the basic HMO is $62 non-postal pay period versus the high deductible, which was $48 per pay period. So you're paying a little bit more in premium, but what you're getting is peace of mind, just a copay type plan. From day one, you just go to our network of doctors and you're simply paying that copayment. Your preventative care is covered at 100% outside of any copay. There are no referrals required. It brings a high degree of predictability and a low degree of risk. You also have nationwide coverage as you do with any one of our plans. And that all-important catastrophic out-of-pocket maximum, which is the maximum that you will pay before we will cover everything at 100%, is $4,000 again for a single in that plan.
Okay.
What's the deductible for the open access plan?
No deductible.
Oh, there is
no deductible. For the open access plans, no.
Wow.
No, they're simply copay plans. There is a... inpatient hospital charges are paid for at 90%. So if you were to accumulate 10% amounts up to the $4,000 out-of-pocket maximum, then we would pay 100% from that point on. But there's no deductible.
Yeah. So let's say you're in a high deductible plan and you get sick and those high deductibles, you know, you're going to have to meet them. The next open season, of course, you can go from, say, your high deductible back to an Aetna open access if you've got some think you're going to have some chronic or health issues for that year.
Yes, you could, and you could use your health savings account to pay for the out-of-pocket, the up to $4,000 in out-of-pocket expenses that you could anticipate incurring if your condition is very serious.
Yeah.
All right. I think I know the answer to this. If, like John mentioned, if they switch from the high deductible to a non-high deductible, can they use the money in the health savings account to pay the delta in the premium? We're going to have not a high deductible plan anymore, so our premium is going to go up. Can that additional premium come out? I don't think so.
It has to be used for IRS qualified medical expenses, similar to like a flexible spending account or a health savings account has to be used for qualified medical expenses, and out of pocket premiums are not one.
Okay, well, that's the accountant in me asking that question, not the anyway. So now we're single, but we're late career or we're retiree. So we'll do late career, retiree. What are we looking for in the Aetna plans?
Again, single.
Yeah, single. I got to say single, then we'll do the whole thing married.
You're with children.
Lifelong bachelor. So here, you know, you're approaching retirement. So what are you looking for? You're probably interested in traveling. Maintaining that vibrant single life. You want to sort of begin to prepare for your retirement years. You're really not sure where you're going to retire to. Maybe you will this year. A great option that we briefly touched on early on was a consumer-driven health plan. That gains access to Aetna's larger PPO, Preferred Provider Organization network, nationwide. It provides you with those fund dollars, the account right up front, so that you can use those dollars to offset your first dollar medical expenses. They will roll over for you if you don't use them and you remain in the plan. You can also use those to pay for to be reimbursed for your Part B premiums if you are moving into Medicare, which is an interesting and beneficial component that a lot of folks don't know about or take advantage of.
Okay. Now, outside the U.S., is there coverage under any of these plans?
There is coverage primarily for emergency type care, a serious illness that develops outside of the United States. I'd encourage you to look at plans specifically designed for international coverage that are within the FEHBP program if you're working overseas or something of that nature.
Okay, now let's start up the ladder again. And now we're married, young, no children yet. So we're listening to the show and say, what should I look for in the Aetna array of plans? Again, young, married. Maybe not beginning career, but a little bit beyond beginning career. No children yet.
Okay. I'd say this newly launched value plan might be something for you. The out-of-pocket premiums are relatively low. They're not as low as the high deductible plan, but they're lower than the open access basic HMO plan that I previously described. It provides you with a really high quality, nationally available health plan at affordable rates, which includes wellness incentive credits. Provides all of your preventative care at 100%. This is the vanishing deductible plan that I touched on before. It's the focus here is we wanted to roll out something to answer OPM's call for really encouraging wellness incentives in plans. And what we did is we designed something that's analogous to a deductible-based PPO plan, where once you hit your deductible, you access the plan benefits at coinsurance rates. Here, the deductible is $600 for single, $1,200 for family, but you can reduce that deductible amounts by doing things like getting your flu shot, getting your 100% preventative care. Each one of those, there must be a dozen different elements that you've accessed will reduce your deductible by $50. You can each year you can reduce that deductible by up to $300. And if you didn't use the credits against your deductible in that given year, they will roll over and accumulate into the next year as well.
Great. You just mentioned something. And by the way, if you want to talk to Tom, if you want to talk to John, or if you want to talk to me, 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. And today is November what?
19th.
19th, 2012. And we'll be here for about another 20 minutes. It's 10:36, so about 10:56. Andrew will give us a sign and we're off. But the show is rebroadcast many times during the month, so if you're listening to it at another date and another time, please don't call, but you certainly can email us. We'll talk about the email. Might as well say it now. For, F-O-R, name of the show, your, Y-O-U-R, benefit, as in benefit, at NITPINC.com. For your benefit at NITPINC.com. You mentioned something just a minute ago, Tom, and I apologize to OPM that I didn't bring it up before. OPM wants people to be well. So they have a wellness, if you will, directive. So let's say that I want to participate in that and I want to exercise and I want to eat right, heavens forbid. Is there any benefit that I get out of that other than good health? Is there a monetary reward so that if, like you say, if I go get a flu shot, then I might benefit on the premium side? I don't know if you said that. But
you, you benefit on the benefit side, okay. Actually. If you get an additional $50 that reduces your out-of-pocket benefit costs. If you complete a health risk assessment, regardless of how healthy you are or not, by completing it, you get another $50 that reduces your out-of-pocket benefit costs. Like I said, if you look at our plan brochure, our materials online at aetnafeds.com, you'll see that there's a whole host of wellness-type measures that you can access within this value plan that will reduce your out-of-pocket benefit exposure.
So if we were looking body fat to mass to cholesterol to whatever else, then it's not only – the main reward is we're going to be healthier. But if there's a side benefit to it monetarily potentially, that's nice too. And you have those provisions written into the Aetna plan.
That's true. It's not only in the value plan, but there are also wellness credits that will increase fund dollars in the consumer-driven health plan. You know how I said you had $1,000 and $2,000 up front? You can actually complete some of those similar items to have an additional $50 single, $100 family deposited into your consumer-driven health plan fund. And if I could step back away just 1 second into more of an altruistic mode.
It sounds like we got a phone call.
Completing the health risk assessment provides us with the information that we need to sort of direct you to access the type of health care that you need. For example, if you have high blood pressure, we can send notices to you reminding you that you should receive your tests.
Okay, we've got a caller. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Everything is good. And you?
Very well. Thank you.
All righty. Fire away.
Actually, I have a question. It relates to the high deductible health plan, really to the HSA account. I'm married, and my wife and I are thinking about starting a family, and I think I'll be getting off my high deductible health plan, which is single only, and probably joining my wife's plan and going on a family plan with her employer, which is not the federal government. My question is, I currently have an HSA. Can I keep that HSA? And if I switch over to a non-high deductible health plan, can I continue to contribute to that HSA account as well?
That's a great question. I'll break it down into two parts. You absolutely can keep your HSA, and you can use HSA funds to pay for out-of-pocket expenses that you incur under your wife's health plan, non-federal government health plan. The second part of your question is Can you continue to contribute to the HSA while you're covered under a presumably non-qualified high deductible health plan under your wife's insurer? And the answer to that is no, you can't. It has to. You have to be participating in a qualified high deductible health plan in order to make contributions into your HSA.
And that would be true federal or non-federal.
That's correct.
So if you stayed in a federal plan but dropped a high deductible, you couldn't contribute to it, even if it was in the federal. And the same rule would apply, like you say, if you were moved to your spouse's and not have a high deductible, there wouldn't be any deduction there as either. First, they can't accept the money.
Now, if your wife's plan is a high deductible health plan, you can continue to make deposits into your HSA that you established under the federal plan up to the limit for 2013 is $6,450 for a family.
Did that answer it?
It does. I had one quick follow-up question. If at some later date, let's say, I don't know, 30 years from now or whatever, I decide to come back into a high deductible health plan, can I then bring that HSA back with me and start contributing to it again?
You certainly can.
Great.
It's with you for life.
And if you don't use it, it's just it's like any other investment. It's growing wherever you might have it invested. So it's kind of sort of like a deductible IRA. We don't want to even compare the two, but the concept is the same, except it's for medical expenditures. So during that period of time, if it grew and money was not taken out of it, then you can just start putting more money into it, make it grow even that much more.
Are you aware of the 5-year rule?
Tax
caller?
No, I'm not.
Okay. You sound pretty young, so you don't sound like you're nearing retirement.
No, I'm a long way away from that.
Okay, but if you want to carry your federal health insurance, regardless of what type of plan you're in, into retirement, you have to be under a federal employee health benefits plan for the 5 years immediately preceding retirement. Otherwise, you can't carry it into retirement. And so that's one thing. If you're switching to your spouse's private sector plan, you'd have to, if you're going to make a career and retire from the federal government, you'd have to make sure you re-enrolled in any federal plan so you meet the 5-year or enrolled 5 years immediately preceding retirement. If you are, and this is a terrific benefit, then you can carry it into retirement at the same cost and coverage as federal employees pay, no different. A lot of the private sector plans are great while you're employed with that firm, business, whatever. But not so great, and this is the norm, not so great in retirement or once you leave the company. That's the opposite of the federal plan for retirees. So that's something you need to never forget.
good to know.
Yeah.
All righty.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
It was a great call for many reasons, but one was now we're married and with children.
Nice segue.
All right. So, okay, where do we go now, Tom? We're married with children, and what plan are we looking at? What I can't say what makes the most sense, because what makes the most sense is sometimes in the hands of the holder.
Yeah, I'd say married with children. And, you know, our HMO network in the D.C. area is, pretty vast. I would probably move you back towards the open access basic plan. You're getting, predictable level of out-of-pocket expenses at a very affordable premium price, low out-of-pocket, relatively low out-of-pocket maximum, where we'll go ahead and pick up 100% of the coverage if you have a catastrophic year. But the important thing is that all of your preventative care, your wellness visits for the children to the pediatrician, et cetera, are being paid for at 100%, and your out-of-pocket exposure is relatively limited for the year.
Okay. All right, one last stop on this one. Married later in the career, early retirement. Do we transition to a different type of plan when we retire as compared to when we're on the job?
You know, when you retire and, you know, again, like if you're looking for maximum flexibility with respect to traveling and you're not really sure where you're going to live, you might want to move away from complete in-network coverage only HMO type plan and move into something like the consumer-driven health plan or that value plan that I previously mentioned. Or still, you know, the high-deductible health plan is no slouch either, because you as you're approaching retirement, as the caller just mentioned, you know, he wants to use his health savings account at some point in the future. And it's not use it or lose it. It's there with you for your lifetime. So you've got a great opportunity here to, minimize your tax exposure while building that health savings account, so you have more disposable income as you approach the years where you're going to need more health care and probably more expensive health care.
Plus, when you enroll in Medicare, as you will at 65, at least for Part A, if not Part B as well, they kick you out of the high deductible plan, do they not?
Well, we don't kick you out, but the law does.
The law does.
The law does. But you still can enroll in the consumer-driven health plan,
right,
where you could have that benefit fund right up front and use that to pay for your Part B premiums.
Understood. Yeah.
I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, that if somebody is still working, they qualify for Medicare, they're 65, 66, 67, whatever, and they have a high deductible health care. If they don't enroll for Medicare and then they do retire and they enroll for Medicare, there's no penalty.
But Part B. You're talking Part B.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're under a employer-sponsored plan and you're working past 65, there are no delayed enrollment penalties on Part B until 8 months after you finally retire.
But could they still have a high deductible plan?
Well, the thing is, you could choose not to enroll for Part A, which is the hospitalization portion, but that's free. And that's a valuable benefit if you have to go into the hospital, because a combination of Part A and whatever federal plan you have virtually eliminates any out-of-pocket expenses for a hospital stay.
Okay.
So I'd be a little leery about not applying for Part A as soon as I could.
I'm with you. It just came up last week, and we were, for those listening, there's a fine point here, and it's a very interesting fine point. And we have a caller. Are you through, John?
I'm through, yes.
Okay.
Unless the caller has a question.
Okay.
Yeah, I do have a question.
All right, good.
Is there any statistics out there for how many folks are on this high deductible plan? You know, that sounds interesting, but I suspect very few are.
Yeah, there are statistics, and within the private sector, the statistics are up around 20% of employees are in these types of plans. Employers who are providing health care coverage to their employees in the private sector have been encouraging them and moving folks into them at a much more rapid pace than in the public sector. In the public sector, the number is less than 10% overall, and within the federal government, it's less than 2%.
Well, you know, because actually if you think about health insurance, really not insurance, become like a benefit. It's not, you really are not following the principles of insurance unless you consider something like high deductible.
Well, I think the high deductible scares people off. I'm a tax accountant type, and
yeah.
I was around, I'd like to say, right before this was introduced, but I remember when it was introduced, most people bristled at it because of the high deductible. And said,
yeah,
I don't want to do that. But if they weighed the savings and premium and the amount of money that they could put aside, and then it grew, it was a really nice deal and continues to be a nice deal, but wildly non-popular.
Yes,
the concept of insurance, for anyone interested in the concept of insurance should look at those catastrophic plan maximums. Yeah. That's the maximum that you will pay for out-of-pocket expenses before your insurance pays 100%. And for the high deductible health plan, those are 4,000. That's 4,000 single, and 8,000 family in network. So all of the stuff going on underneath those catastrophic maximums, there are great tools there to help you save on your taxes, to help you grow a savings account, to earn interest. But at the end of the day, if you get hit by the bus, you want to know what your exposure is before the plan's going to pay 100%. Yeah. And here it's $4,000 for an individual.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. All righty. Where were we? We were pre-retirement and retirement, right? And I think we had gotten through there. So now dental. Okay, we covered all this. Now dental, I think dental's an equal access issue. So do you have dental plans and do you have vision plans, to be fair?
We do, Bob. We have dental and vision benefits embedded in all of our health plans. I've gone through our HMO plans, basic and high. I've gone through our consumer-driven plans and our high-deductible health plans. Each of those has dental and vision benefits included at different degrees, depending on the plan. The richest dental and vision benefit included in any of those plans is with that consumer-driven health plan, where we're actually giving you the dental fund dollars right up front included in your health plan at no additional premium to use towards your dental expenses throughout the year. You also have access to Aetna's PPO dental network and discounts associated with that network. Your vision care under that plan is also your exams are covered at 100%, and you can use your medical fund to pay for prescription eyewear. So if you're looking for a plan and I want to get maximum medical, I want to get dental and vision benefits out of my health plan, and I don't want to pay for a FedVIP, the Federal Employee Dental and Vision Insurance Plan, dental benefit or vision benefit, I would encourage you to look at our consumer-driven health plan because you're going to get some pretty decent benefits associated with those.
So this is like we're buying the automobile and we're going to get, for me, a bigger engine.
Our navigation system.
Navigation, thank you. I'm showing my age. Or I was going to say air conditioning. But, so we can have add-ons to the basic vehicle, if you will.
Yeah. Now, we do offer a standalone dental plan under the Federal Employee Dental and Vision Insurance Program. That dental plan is a worldwide dental plan. It includes all it includes in and out of network benefits. There's no deductible associated with that plan. The annual in network maximum is $3,000. Those are dental expenses that we'll pay for if you participate in that plan. It covers preventative services, fillings, extractions, crowns, implants, dentures, root canals. The advantage of the FedVIP dental and vision plans is that if you're an active employee, your premiums for those plans are paid on a pre-tax basis, so you're not paying taxes and then paying for a voluntary dental or vision plan.
Okay. All righty. So we have a few more minutes left. Kind of general comments as to we never have comparison between plans. We never say anything bad about other plans, but let's say we're shopping. What makes us go down the Aetna aisle? What draws us to the Aetna aisle? Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Well,
brag about yourself a little bit. But
at the end of the day, we're offering an array of affordable value and quality benefit health plans that – you know, we have an option for anybody. I mean, we've sort of run the gamut on different scenarios, from young single just entering the government to not so young and about to retire, or even, you know, participating in Medicare. And we've demonstrated, given our tenure in the FEHBP program, I mean, we're one of only two plans that have been in the FEHBP program continuously since its inception in 1960. We also provide some tools that are very unique in terms of the innovation that we bring to the government that are primarily accessed through our website. I encourage you to go to Aetna, Feds, AETNAFEDS.com take a cruise and utilize some of those tools. Actually, we provide you with a username and password to preview those tools as if you were a member. That's Federal 3 for both the username and the password, Federal 3.
Okay. John, now you were a consumer because you were a Fed distinguished career.
I still
so when you were shopping.
Retiree.
Okay, I know.
Yeah,
okay. So when you were shopping.
Yes.
What did you look for?
I looked at how much I was willing to pay for what the individual plans covered. I've never been, and still have never been, in a high option plan of any of the plans I've been in. You know, my family, knock on wood, enjoyed good health, and so far so good as well. So what I would look for is I would look at cost first, and then I'd worry about coverage, because coverage really wasn't an issue for us.
Okay.
Now, one thing this open season, as in any open season, you might want to do is look at your current plan, make sure it still covers what you need to have covered, and it still costs what you're willing to pay. But if you want to review other plans, you're not in Aetna, for example, and you want to explore Aetna because you've listened to this show, you go to opm.gov, the insurance page, and the information on all the plans is there. If you want to just look at Aetna, you can also go to their website, which Tom can tell you what that is, I guess.
AetnaFeds.com.
Okay. Tom, thanks for coming in and educating us. John, thanks for the comments, and thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.